Hello and welcome to this edition of Not Another Book Review, the podcast where our guests will share concepts or ideas they have read about in books and their experiences of applying those concepts in real life. Much like our approach to consultancy, theory is all well and good, but it's the application that matters. This podcast is the first of a two-episode special where our very own Sam will be talking to neuromarketing expert, speaker, trainer and researcher Katie Hart. Katie says that neuromarketing will help you understand, communicate and engage with your customers like never before, something that everyone we work with aspires to do. So Katie, thank you so much for joining us today. And Sam, over to you.
Just for our listeners, they may not have heard of the term neuromarketing before. Could you start by explaining what that means?
Of course, yeah, be delighted to. And don't panic, there's not many people have heard of neuromarketing. What neuromarketing is the application of neuroscience into the field of marketing. So neuroscience officially looks at our nervous system, but most neuroscience really concentrates on our brain. So we're looking at the way our brain works, we're understanding how our brain makes sense of the world around it, how things like memory works, how some things capture our attention and some things don't, how we start to make purchasing decisions. All of that neuroscience information and knowledge that we have within the academic field, we take that out of the academic environment and apply it into the business or corporate world of marketing.
Brilliant. Yeah, I know the book that we're talking about, Brainfluence by Roger Dooley. I love how he kind of applies the science and the academic study to a professional business environment. I know you do that yourself through your work. So could you just tell us a bit how you've specifically applied some principles from the book?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, neuroscience, it has been growing a lot recently. We've got amazing technology which now enables us to actually look at the brain while it's working and to actually present content to people and see how their brain is responding to it. So it is just such an exciting area, but we don't want it to stay in academia. You know, there is so much that we can learn. So being able to take that knowledge and that insight and apply it for the benefit of businesses is really exciting. So a few of the ways that I've applied it, I worked with an organization who were very male dominated, and they knew they were very male dominated. They're in a male dominated sector. It's in the oil industry. So it's their reputation goes before them. But they understood the benefits of being able to recruit more females into the industry, and they were going through the motions and struggling to get more and more female applications. They just, you know, they were literally only getting sort of 3 or 5% of their applications would come from females. And so one of the principles that Roger talks about in Brainfluence is actually using stories. And what we did was we created a series of stories which supported their recruitment process. So we were using things like case studies and a sort of a life in the day of, and giving a real feel for what that role would be like if people came forward and applied for it. And using very specific, deliberate language, which enabled us to really paint a very visual and sensual picture about what they would be like and how they would be making a difference to the environment and to the planet for future generations, and all sorts of really motivating factors which we know speak very engagingly to female audiences. So that's one way that I've used some of the content. Another way was actually similar, looking at the differences between gender. Another way was working with a private school who had the opposite situation. So they'd typically been only females, and they were looking to expand and to go co-education. So they suddenly had to make their environment appealing to boys to come in for the first time, but also make sure that their website and their content and their messaging really resonated with potential students and of course their parents who might be looking at placing their young people there. And in that instance, what we were looking at, one of the principles that Roger talks about is keeping it simple, and how particularly the male brain likes things to be digestible and presented in a very clear cut way. So knowing that we were particularly going to be targeting the male brains, we developed a campaign which had not only very simple messages, but also presented very simply. So the images were not cluttered, you know, there was a lot of white space. It was very easy on the eye and on the brain to be able to interpret what we were saying. In that instance, we didn't use things like case studies because we wanted to appeal more to that, that male gender. So we used much more traits like bullet points and things that present information in a very easily digestible, accessible way. So yeah, that was fantastic. And actually, as a result of working with them on those campaigns, they are already 2 years ahead of schedule. They are already almost at 50-50 gender split. So it has been phenomenally successful to see the take up on that one.
Wow.
And perhaps more recently, something I was working on looks at this, this principle that Roger talks about, where we, I think in marketing, we're often obsessed with getting people's attention and actually capturing their attention. And, you know, when we do conventional market research, we say, you know, we firstly need people to notice, did you notice that advert, or did you notice that that content in your social media feed? But actually, what Roger says is right. And a lot of processing, a huge amount, in fact, of processing happens in our brain below that conscious level of attention. And we can actually achieve great results for brands by working at that, that almost unconscious level.
Yeah, it's really interesting how much actually goes on behind the surface that you're not even aware of. It was really interesting that you have... when you mentioned about using neuromarketing for recruitment, because you know, with the great resignation, there's a lot of people, particularly in our sectors, trying to recruit. So a lot of people are also trying to get people on board with change. So I just wondered, could you use neuromarketing in communications to kind of get people on board with change programs?
Yeah, absolutely you can. And it's, you know, change is something that, again, in, it has an evolutionary function for us that kind of protects us from change. And, you know, we are quite resistant to it, and we tend to gravitate back to what's familiar. And, you know, and again, they can lead to some of these unconscious biases that we have as well, is that that sort of familiarity sense. So yeah, there's lots of research that's been done. There's lots of work that colleagues of mine do that are deliberately focusing on change and managing change, and change programs being adopted in organisations. So yeah, I mean, the potential for this knowledge is absolutely huge. And whether it is team building and bringing people together, or yes, whether it's recruitment, whether it's motivating people, you know, trying, we've all been through a difficult time, and actually getting people galvanized as a team and inspired and feeling confident and positive again, you know, there's lots of ways that neuroscience can support and facilitate that too. So really, wherever we've got people, or wherever we are engaging with people or influencing people, there is huge potential for neuromarketing and neuroscience to be able to really be a catalyst in that, that process.
Brilliant. I know we were chatting about COVID before we started recording. I was just wondering, with COVID kind of forcing people to work from home and communicate more digitally, is neuromarketing something we could kind of apply to communicate better, perhaps online?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's neuroscience has been really interested in the kind of outcome of all of us who have been forced into this situation. It's the kind of social experiment none of us would ever get past the ethics committee. You know, take most of the world and lock them up, see what happens. You know, the neuroscience has learned a lot, and you know, our brains are very flexible. We do have this plasticity where our brains can be quite quick to adapt and to do things in different ways, and seeing how they've adjusted to this new world that we had inflicted on us in the sort of lockdowns and the pandemics has given us great insight into some of those processes too, which has been very exciting to see. But yeah, I mean, in terms of neuromarketing, what we know is that actually the brain works best when it's looking at 3D. So we get a lot of cues from our environment, visual cues, that is, in sort of three dimensions. And if we don't have three-dimensional moving images, the next best thing for us is actually three-dimensional static images in terms of what captures the brain's attention and what we get most information from. So I think most of us would think that actually it's the 2D moving images which would come second place to 3D, but actually it's not. 3D is preferable for us. So then once we get into that sort of Zoom format of communicating online where we've got 2D images, we've already lost a lot of the way we normally pick up cues in terms of what's going on around us. And one of the other things that's quite interesting as well is that actually because we've spent so much time staring at screens instead of being in an office environment, potentially driving or getting on the tube or the bus to go to that office environment, it has actually created a lot of stress within our brains. So if you think that most of us are using what we call binocular vision, so we have two eyes who look forwards and focus on one focal point, and our brain gets a lot of information about how far away that focal point is. So if we're looking at something on the horizon, our eyes are focused on that point, so the angle of our eyes is actually quite broad still. Whereas if you think you're focusing on something in front of you, like a Zoom screen, it may only be 2 or 3 feet away from you, then actually the angle becomes much, much more abrupt. So that sends information to our brain. So things that are up close to us, our brain puts much more resource into and finds it much more urgent because they are immediate. You know, again, it's back to evolutionary past. Something that's a long way away, we don't have to pay that much attention to. Whereas when it's up close and personal, obviously we've got a lot more resources we apply to it. So not having that ability to walk down the street to get on the bus or to be driving has meant that all of a sudden, a lot of our time was spent indoors in close proximity. And so our brain was working at that sort of hyper-sensitive, hyper-intensive level for weeks. And you know, that's why it was so important that we did actually get out and just look around us, look up to the sky, you know, even if you just lay on a balcony and look up to the sky or something that just enables your eyes to focus a long way away, because that is instantly going to start reducing some of the stress levels. So it means that we were all in more tense situations on online meetings than we would have been if we were in a room full of people, combined with the fact that a lot of us had children you could hear kicking off in the next room, or you know, having to be mindful of whether you've got washing draped over the radiators behind us in our meetings, or all the things that we were coping with, you know, in that context of the broader concerns and anxieties of a global pandemic and health and, you know, family and job security and things that went along with it. So it was a very stressful time that being online exacerbated that, because we were just compounding the stress that was already there for us by forcing ourselves to be having all this communication in a very tight space that then sends lots more stress messages across our brain.
Wow. So is there anything we could do online to make it a bit better?
I think, I mean, some of the things you can do online is try not to be. So, you know, in the gaps between meetings, just make sure that you are really looking around you, going out for a walk, looking up if you don't have space that you can really sort of walk around you. Or even those moments where you daydream, so where you're not actually looking at something, but your eyes kind of focus on something beyond them, if you know what I mean by that. So where you're not necessarily looking at something that's close to you, that will instantly start to relieve some of those stress levels. I think in terms of if we are in meetings, what we need to do is just be very aware and very mindful of the way other people may interpret things. So it's a lot about being really clear. So instead of assuming that people have understood what we meant, actually getting them to clarify things back to us so that we can ensure that they've received the message and that they've interpreted it as we intended. Because when our stress levels raise, you know, we jump to conclusions, we take shortcuts, a lot more of those biases come in, which we think are serving us, but actually in terms of contributions, you know, they can be negative. I think another thing we need to do is give everybody space to talk. So if we are managing a meeting or if we are in a team meeting, really intentionally giving everybody a chance to engage and to connect, because our whole dynamic of contributing in a group situation like that is so different. And for some people, they never quite get that confidence to actually speak up. And we know that, you know, lots of people have some fantastic ideas, and if we don't hear their voices, then we may never get to benefit from those ideas. So making sure everybody has a chance to talk and making sure that we all equally listen to each of those ideas and give them the space and the time that they deserve, I think is just so positive for everybody involved. And you know, just trying to emulate some of those more social elements again, because the conversations which are not so work purpose, not so sort of goal driven, actually start to release more of that oxytocin in our brain, which is all about connection and trust and rapport and just facilitating that and allowing people the time for some of those more mundane conversations we'd normally have by the photocopier or, you know, in the kitchen while we wait for the microwave to finish. We need to still allow those conversations to take place. So if we are going to be working remotely and having more of those conversations done through Zoom or more of those meetings done through Zoom, we need to try and create opportunities where we can just reinforce those social connections as well.
Yes, that's a really good point. We have a daily meeting at Essie where we have an agenda. So everyone says what their daily priority is and we talk about different things every day. But it's nice that you get to hear everyone speak. And yeah, it's just an opportunity to have a bit of a chat as well and have those conversations.
It is. And I think, you know, for some of us, depending on what our roles are, there can be alarmingly large chunks of the day when we don't speak or when you don't hear, you know, and I tend to have the radio on when I'm in the office, and that you still feel as though you've got connection and you've got people around you. But I know that there are some elements of work that I'm doing that I can't have a podcast or a radio on. I've got to switch it off so I can utterly concentrate. Now, if you're doing that for too many hours at a go, you really need that human interaction and those conversations again. So allowing people that time. And if it's structured in, if everybody knows that at least at one point every day, they're going to be checking in with each other, they've got an opportunity to feedback, then, you know, those count on so many levels, more than just ensuring that the agenda gets met and the projects are all making good progress. It serves us as human beings and our brains really benefit from those kind of, you know, they may feel quite small in the moment, but just those conversations reinforce and they can literally change the sort of chemical trajectory of that person's brain for the day.
Could you share a bit more about your research and how our listeners can get involved?
You know, a lot of what I do is about research. So I'm always sort of keen to hear from people who are prepared to be involved in research. I've always got an ongoing research question that people can do remotely on my website as well. So if any of that is of interest to people, that would be fantastic if they want to take part and go along and visit that. But yeah, no, I think I've probably talked enough at this morning. But if people have any questions or anything, then yeah, more than happy to respond to any questions that people may have.
Brilliant. Can people find out more about neuromarketing on your website?
They can, yes. So my website is katiehart.co.uk. So yeah, there's lots of information there about neuromarketing, lots of blogs and insights, and there is a section called research, and that's where you can go online and do the monthly research. So if you want to do that, that would be great. Yeah, katiehart.co.uk, or I'm on LinkedIn, or, you know, all the usual places you can find me there.
Brilliant. And you recommended the book Brain Fluence by Roger Dooley.
I did indeed. Yes. I mean, I think it's a very accessible start point for people. I've just completed a master's degree in applied neuroscience, but I know lots of people don't want to go into it to that level. So what Roger has in this book is lots of practical, bite-sized, digestible things you can go away and try in your own business without needing to understand huge amounts about the brain and how it works. But don't get me wrong, he's got all the evidence and all the science there if you want to delve a bit deeper. But if not, hopefully it's a great start point that people can dip into and find something pragmatic that they can take away and apply.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you. Been lovely talking to you.